Hey folks, this is Kevin. Just a few words before we start. First of all, I want to say a few words about Squarespace.com, our newest sponsor. If you don't know, Squarespace is the all-in-one way to create a truly exceptional website. They have customizable templates that are very professional looking, gorgeous. You drag and drop photos and text into your designs in seconds. Building pages is easy. You can import content from blogs, build your own blog. Squarespace will help you secure a domain name. They have fantastic customer support. Your site is going to look great on any size, format, any device. And for a free trial and 10% off, just go to squarespace.com and enter the offer code RISK9. That's squarespace.com, and the offer code is RISK9. Also, we're constantly hearing how important it is to save money, but what about time? Especially if you're running a small business, time is just as valuable. That's why you need Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can avoid all those trips to the post office. You can get official U.S. postage using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, you know, Stamps.com is open 24/7. You can do your mailing and shipping when it's convenient for you. Priority mail, first-class mail, international, all this for just a fraction of the cost of one of those postage meters. So with Stamps.com, you save money and time. We use it, and we love it. And right now, you use our promo code RISK for this special offer. It's a no-risk trial, plus a $110 bonus offer that includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in RISK. That's Stamps.com. Enter RISK. Now here's the show. Kids, this is RISK, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is Sean Lee behind me now. Well, this is our 150th episode. By the end of this episode, we will have presented 481 stories. Some stories outrageously X-rated. Some stories jaw-droppingly hilarious. And some truly tear-jerking, and all of them radically honest. This is just about the most uncensored storytelling show you can find. There have been stories told on this show that you'd be unlikely to hear anywhere else, not on TV or NPR, not even on other podcasts. If you are new to the show, I highly recommend you check out the list of episodes on iTunes. Look for the best of RISK, number 1, 2, 3, and 4. Perfect introduction to what we do. Week after week, we get emails from fans, people saying radically different things like, holy shit, that was the most hilarious thing I ever heard. It really brightened up my day. Other times people will write in, man, I was feeling suicidal and the show helped me make it through. So if you're new, you've got 150 episodes to look back on now. We're celebrating this special occasion with an all-star episode. In just a bit, we're going to hear from the gorgeous and hilarious Aisha Tyler. But before that, you might remember him from Jerry Maguire, SNL, The West Wing, and he has his own podcast called More Stories. He told this hilarious story at the RISK Live Show in Los Angeles at the Nerd Melt Theater. We do that once a month, every fourth Thursday there. This is Jay Moore with a story we call Summer Lovin'.
(Clears throat) I have two boys at home. One of them might be gay. I'm just going to tell you straight up. It's questionable. If you have a kid between the age of 2 and 14, waiting list the whole way. I'm not... You don't know. Because when they're with their buddies, everything's gay. Like, you wrestle. I did it. You wrestle. You're punching each other in the junk. You're sleeping in a tent in the living room. Like, all right, now let me try. Ha, ha, ha. And you're like, what's going on? A sleepover with 5-year-old boys is gayer than Rufus Wainwright and Richard Simmons having sex on top of the gay pride flag. It's unbelievable. And look, I'm all gay. Like, all my chips for gay rights. It's human rights. It's absurd. And I got, sure, you know, we like humans. We were in the comic book store a little too late. You guys hesitant, like, oh yeah, that's us, sorry. In this centaur cyborg world I created in my head. I have to teach my boys about the birds and the bees, and everybody's different. You know, parents, they'll go like, when's the right age for the birds and the bees? Everybody's different. My wife, uber sexual, at 4 years old, asked her mom how it works. Her mom told her. A 4-year-old, Nicole Avery Cox, said to her mom, does it feel good? 4 years old. Like, do you sit on daddy's lap? Like, you total, like, how does this work? When does it start? Is there a height thing? Do I have to be this tall? Me, public school in New Jersey, I didn't need to know anything because everybody knew you got pregnant by peeing in each other's butts. That's how we knew. That's, we knew. Like, all right, you can put it in there, but don't pee. I don't want to get pregnant. These are two boys talking to each other. Half slice. These are two boys taught, just don't pee in my butt. I don't want to get pregnant. I was gay when I was 7. I gave it a good run. Like, I tried hard. Like, I don't... It's amazing it didn't take. Because I gave it a good, long, stiff run. Eddie Collins. See, I just got like... See, like, my stomach? I just got like a... Oh. Summer of Love, 1977. I remember it so well. None of this is made up. This is all true. I don't have any bits or shtick. If you ever come see my stand-up, we'll break it down just like this. I'm telling you. Eddie Collins asked me in his clubhouse behind his house, do you know what a blowjob is, JJ? And I go, yeah, but I didn't. I thought a blowjob, this is the truth, was when you blow on a vagina. Like if she was nice enough, just like putting out a candle. But we also thought you peed in butts to make babies. So I'm like, yeah. And he goes, what is it? And I told him, he goes, that's not what it is. And then he showed me with his mouth what it was. Amazing. Like the greatest feeling in the world. Like, it felt good. I don't give a shit. That was imagine how much you enjoy, guys and trannies, I guess if you're here, why cut anybody out? How much you like a blowjob. Now imagine that same feeling before you know your times tables. Like you're still kind of working with primary colors and then boom. Wow. You talk about killing an ant with a shotgun. Just like, holy shit. I still like the felt on my blanket. This is fucking crazy. And I liked it so much that I would do it to him. And I didn't like doing it to him. It tasted like pennies. Like if you hold pennies in your hand, there's the whiff of Clorox that I still can't figure out when I go back to the well. But I like getting it so much, I let him do it to me. That I did it to him. I had to get it back. Like I had to let him just, we did it all summer. Like he'd call my house and goes, JJ home? We're like, you know, the back door knocks and I'm like, oh, I hope that's Eddie Collins. And he'd be like, you wanna come over? I'm like, I guess. I had to play it cool in front of the boat, like, I guess, whatever. You know. and we just go to the clubhouse, and we would blow each other. Like, totally, I'm completely straight, but like that, for 3 months, all I did, I had Eddie Collins's little like pacifier dick in my mouth, because we were seven, like nothing came out, we were kids, but I mean, that's all we did. Like, we didn't play video games, we didn't read, we didn't go to the community pool, just sucking little dick after little dick. Like this little blow bang, just again, because you don't ejaculate, so it never ends, because you don't come, you're like, again. And it felt good. And I'm not ashamed of that. A lot of you are a lot more uncomfortable than I am. I gave it up. Here's my point. All right, don't make a big deal out of it. Eddie Collins. I'm from New Jersey. Eddie Collins is the chief of police. Life works in weird ways. It's like governor, lieutenant governor, Eddie Collins. I drive as fast as I want through New Jersey. I don't put my headlights on at night. I got 3 wheels on a stolen BMW. I got a family of Haitians in the trunk, bound and gagged, duct tape, flex cuffed, rolling joints, steering with my knee. I don't give a fuck. What are they gonna pull me over? Some bullshit patrolman? Get Chief Collins on the radio, asshole. And then Chief Collins goes, well, what's his name? And the guy goes, Jay Moore. He goes, let him go. He works for us. Just give him your gun and your badge. Drop him off to Manhattan. And give him my cell phone number. Tell him to type in #77. It's not who you know, it's who you blow after all. That's, here we are in Hollywood. That's a lesson I need you to take home with you. Thank you, you're an amazing host. I love you, I mean it. Thank you very much, everybody.
This story is going to be about a high school crush, and much like sex in high school, I think we're all going to be a little disappointed. So, the thing about being a girl and being in high school is that pretty much you're just this like open kind of leaky wound with feet. And you walk around trying to protect like the part that doesn't have a scab, and pretty much everybody else just is a finger just poking you in the part with no scab. So when I was in high school, I, like all girls, I was constantly in love, and everything was fucking coming to an end. Much like the Mayans, everything was always about to come to a fucking end. Right? If this doesn't happen, I'm going to die. Right? If I don't get an A, I'm going to die. If there aren't microwave burritos at lunch, I'm going to fucking die. And I liked this boy. Not in a normal, like, I like you and it's nice, but like, oh God, I like you so much. The inside of me is on the outside. Like that. If anybody's ever felt that way, just my guts are right next to my bus pass. Can't figure out which one to put in the hole. And do you take spleen on this bus? So I liked this boy, and I liked him so much that like I couldn't hide it. Like I couldn't mask it. You know what I mean? I couldn't cover it up at any time. Like it was just always on the outside, just dangling there like an emotional penis, just hanging down. just, I wish I had a cup for my feelings so I could cover them up. Everyone knew that I liked this boy. It began when you like someone so much and they don't like you back, you start to think of ways to get them to like you. And first you go through the normal thing, like I'll be nice. Maybe I'll bring them something. You know, one of those shitty cinnamon rolls with the white stuff that looks like semen. Do you like that? I could. And then when that didn't work, I started telling people. I felt like, well, maybe he doesn't understand, and maybe someone articulates it to him really clearly that I like him so much, he'll at the very least feel sorry for me and start looking me in the eye when I speak to him instead of treating me like a dog or a homeless person. And so everyone, just slowly everyone in my school knew that I, people that didn't know me were like, that's the big black girl that likes that guy. And it was just awful because this guy did not like me. He was not interested in me in any way. And I just persisted in the way that one persists when one is young and thinks that the world is coming to an end the next day. And I went on with my life, and I had sex with other people because I'm not dead. fucking and love are not the same thing. And he graduated, and he went away. And I made friends with his brother because I thought that would work, right? That's always worked, right? Hanging around with the brother, hoping that the older brother's going to stumble over you. You're naked. Might as well fuck you. I would have tried anything. And I gave up on this boy and moved on. And then this boy came back to my high school in the way that boys who graduate from high school do when they go on to college and suddenly realize that no one gives a fuck about you and your long hair and your ironic pants, you fucking douchebag. Go back to the girls that needed you badly. And so he came back to my high school. This one night we were all out drinking and this boy was paying attention to me. And he was interested in me, and he was listening to my stories, and he was looking me in the face, and it looked like something was going to happen. And I got so excited. I will just say as a corollary or an aside that I've realized as an adult that I have high T. I don't know if you've seen these ads where it's like a balding guy who's got a paunch, and it looks a little sweaty, and he's like, I don't have any testosterone, and no one wants to fuck me. I'm rubbing this shit on my armpits. I hope it works. If any of you guys have low testosterone, you could rub me on your armpits. I'm full of it. I'm one point of T away from being being Chaz Bono. And so if I smell, like if I smell that like fucking's gonna happen, I mean, I just you like a dog, like a pointer, penis. So it seemed like something was gonna happen with this guy, and I just lost my mind, because when you're wishing for something, when you're praying for it with your entire body, with your soul, with everything that you have, with every little bit of teenage fucking tragic bullshit that you have in your body, and then it seems like it might happen, it's like all the keys on a typewriter going at once. Do you know what I mean? And you freeze like a robot whose algorithm is not working, and you just stop in place. And so on this night, I had this thing where I thought, oh God, the thing I've wanted since I was a freshman is going to happen. What do I do? What? And then when my algorithm started functioning again, it said, get drunk, which is obviously what I should have done. So the best way to deal with a high emotion situation where there's a lot of tension and very high stakes is to get fucking wasted. Anybody who tells you that booze is not the answer has not drunk enough. So I decided that the good thing to do to kind of manage my emotions and my feelings and push them back down into the darkness was to drink a lot. So I started to drink, and this being the 90s, I was drinking malt liquor. Don't fuck you and your racist house. You're all racist for laughing. All of you. It was very high-end malt liquor. I believe it was a peach wine cooler of some kind. And followed by a bottle of nitrate, because fuck yeah. And I mean, I'm not an idiot. That shit's cheap. So I drink this booze out of a bottle in a bag, because I'm classy, and I'm also apparently Red Fox. And and I get very, very drunk. And then me and this person, this boy that I've been, this fucking human croissant that I've been wanting to eat for 3 years, we go back to my house, and we fool around. And it's like the end scene in Pulp Fiction when they open the briefcase and a golden light comes out. I get this guy in my bed and I open the briefcase and just beautiful angels. And we fool around and it's so incredible and we're all over the bedroom. Things are being broken. Lives are being changed. Someone crushed a tibia. It was amazing. It was the best night of my life. It was perfect. It was everything I had dreamed of. Or it would have been if I had remembered any of it. I woke up the next morning. Didn't know how I got there. The boy was there. That was awesome. That part was great. It's like looking at an empty pizza box and not remembering eating a pizza. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's really fucking depressing. And everyone else is like, oh, that pizza, Jesus Christ, it was made out of golden baby's tears. And you're like, I don't even have an aftertaste of pizza in my mouth. I don't even remember chewing. I don't even feel full. What happened? But he's a sweet boy, and so he says, it was awesome, and you missed it. And so I ready to rub my nose in it. I don't like you that much anymore. And then we decided to go out and eat something, because I was hungover. And I, as I've said before, the best way to deal with uncomfortable feelings, anxiety, and fear is to drink. And then the way to deal with a terrible hangover is to eat a falafel sandwich. So we went, and we get a falafel. Nice and hot and spicy, full of fat and Middle Eastern things that don't agree with me. I fuck this falafel up because if I'm not going to remember sex, I'm going to fucking remember eating a fucking falafel sandwich. I mean, there was tahini all over. I got sesame in my ass crack. And then I drink a beverage which we don't have anymore in the United States. It's a koala. Does anybody remember this? It was like a fizzy fruit drink. Yes, thank you, sir. And I pound this koala drink. And I'm happy because I don't remember what we did, but I did. It happened. I've been told. And I'm in this car with this boy that I like, and we're driving down Mission Street in San Francisco, and the sun is out, which rarely happens. So, of course, the world's about to come to an end there. And I'm full of falafel. And I'm in the car with this boy, and I'm thinking, you know, we're still hanging out. We'll make it happen again, right? Go for round two. I won't drink all the malt liquor this time, just half. And then my body decides to show me who's the boss. And I was a professional drinker. I started young. So I knew what was about to happen, and I knew what to do. I rolled down the window, and I stuck my head out. We were going maybe 15 miles an hour in a business district, people walking dogs, reading Family Circle. And there's a giant negress puking out of a car window at just the right speed for the vomit to blow out of the passenger side window. Then back into the rear passenger side window and all over the back of the car. I mean, at least it didn't blow back into my face. Fuck the back of the car. But I don't think that I could be humiliated any more than I was at that moment until the boy said, oh my God, stop that. This is my girlfriend's car. I responded, fuck that bitch. Thank you, good night. I've been popping, I've been hanging low. I'm tired of all the same, you know. Watching as the seasons come and go again. Just waiting for something new to change my points of view. Saw you and remember when I had you, then I lost you. I-
This is Risk. This is The Grapes of Wrath behind me now. And we just heard from the fabulous Aisha Tyler. You may recognize her from the shows Archer or 24. She also has her own podcast called Girl on Guy and a brand new book called Self-Inflicted Wounds. Well, this is officially the fourth Risk All-Star episode, and the first three can be found in the albums section of iTunes. They are must-have episodes. They have Sarah Silverman, Mark Maron, Paul F. Tompkins, Lisa Lampanelli, Kevin Nealon, Nick Swartzen, Samantha Bee, Kamau Bell, Greg Fitzsimmons, Adam McKay, Carrie Kenny Silver, and more. But that's not all you'll find in the album section. You'll also find the first, I think it's at this point in time, 18 episodes of Risk. We keep adding the classic early episodes that are no longer available on our free iTunes feed. We remaster them. We take the commercials out and we put them there in the regular iTunes. So do a search for Risk in the album section of iTunes today. Now, in just a bit, we're going to hear from Jessica Williams of The Daily Show. But before that, a very dear friend of mine, a brilliant man, and a wonderful guy. Tom Lennon is a fellow member of my old sketch comedy group, The State. You may recognize him from Reno 911. And he has written a ton of fantastically entertaining movies. It's a tremendous treat to have him on the show. Here he is at the Risk Live Show at the Nerd Melt Theater in Los Angeles with a story we call Sex in a Can.
I have an obsessive compulsive disorder. All of the things that go with it I've put backstage because they fill up your pockets. I have a lot of different Purells. I have a breath spray. I have one on me now, only one. But I have like two more backstage that are next to my at least one or two Purells that I carry at all times. I Purell my hands, I Purell my face, I Purell my entire body. Really, any chance I get, I just put Purell on it. No, it feels good. It actually doesn't hurt. It feels good. So I was down recently. I was down in New Orleans for a couple long stretches right now. I went down to do some feature films in New Orleans because they give a big tax credit to movies. So I was basically living in New Orleans. And for the first long stretch, I was without my wonderful wife and child. The thing about New Orleans is, I don't know if you know this, I'm sure you know this, you, by law in New Orleans, you're never allowed to set down your drink. Like, not only do you not have to, there's just a law. You can just, anywhere you go to any bar and you get what's called a go cup and you can walk. So you literally, you just walk around and you're just self-medicating. It's like basically, you know when you see people in a hospital with an IV that's connected in a thing and they're just wheeling it around? That's you, except the thing in the bag is like Sazerac. So hold, like, it's basically like you're living in a dream. You know the way that Monet saw everything, it seems like? If you look at, because you see, look at Monet paintings, you're like, this is a fucking crazy, beautiful dream. And then you go to Giverny and you look at his garden, you're like, oh, these are just a bunch of beans. But walk around drunk for 2 months and suddenly you're like, everything's fucking beautiful. So after about a solid month of walking around, never having to set down a drink, I ended up at a sex boutique, which is just a shop called Mr. Binky's. And this set is in no way sponsored by them, but they are on Charter Street, and they're called Mr. Binky's, and they're open 24 hours. And I wandered in, drink still in my hand, and I wandered in to Mr. Binky's, and I was expecting, do you guys remember like the blue bumblebee from Star Wars, The Phantom Menace? Who's like supposed to be like an icky Armenian guy who's like, I'm going to sell you a pod racer. I'm a fucking Armenian bumblebee. I always, whenever I walk into a place that's called Mr. Binky's, and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm expecting hovering blue Armenian bumblebee to be like, I got jack-off pills for you. Yeah. Now go. Plant these beans in your butt. So I'm wandering to this place, Mr. Benke's, and the young lady behind the counter, certainly not young enough to be my daughter, says, oh, hi, and she gives me that look that people give me when I know that they know who I am, which was really fun, because it's very late in the evening, and this is a sex, like, a creepy sex video store called Mr. Binky's. On Charters, open 24 hours, not an endorsement. But if you're in Louisiana and you need some lube or weird shit. Okay, I'm going to jump ahead. So she then says, hey, aren't you Zac Efron's friendly Uncle Ned? In the film 17 again. Long pause. To which I say, yeah. And she's like, and she was like, oh, you're looking for some, like, some, you know. And I'm like, and I, you know, so, and I've got an IV of Sazerac going into my system, and I'm like, yeah, yeah. And she's like, well, oh my God, have you ever tried a fleshlight? And I was like, no, what's that? She's like, it's amazing, trust me. Sells me a fleshlight. Now, here's what a fleshlight is. A fleshlight is a portable vagina. It comes in a huge tube. It looked like a cannon. It's, don't call it a pocket pussy because it would never fit in your pocket. I immediately, as soon as as she gave it to me, I was like, I would be better off carrying around the actual Natasha Leggero, who weighs less and has an actual lady's vagina, than this giant cannon you've just saw. It's like the size of a blunderbuss. And here's what's weird about the fleshlight. I don't know who designed it, because you would think anyone is like, hey, let's make up a pretend vagina that you can carry around. You would think they must not know what real vaginas are like. But somehow they talked somebody's sister or something into like an experiment, and it's amazing. It's exactly like a real vagina. In some ways. Except it's also like a blunderbuss that you're carrying around. And a tube. I'm not kidding, you can adjust the level of vacuum that happens. It's crazy. It's insane. This set is also not endorsed by Fleshlight. It's absolutely insane. It's the most realistic vagina in the world. But other than a real one that comes on a lady. Yeah. So she sells me the Fleshlight, and I'm like, okay, here we go. Great. It's just the opposite of a vibrator. That's all it is. It's not a big deal. You could, in fact, buy a vibrator and a Fleshlight and just let them duke it out. Like, if you're just into, like, kind of watching stuff. You could just, like, see how that goes. So she sells me the Fleshlight. I take this giant cannon home. Oh, but here's the thing. When she gives it to me, it comes with tons of rules. And, like, because of my strange OCD, I'm a little bit obsessed with the fact that she gives me lots of instructions for how to clean it. And I was getting the speech that you get when you're like a girl, and she's like, you have a vagina now, you have to you have to take care of it. You have to wash it. And I don't know if this is true for you ladies for real, but never put powder on it, is that something? Never put powder on the Fleshlight. You wake up and there's six of them, and don't feed it after midnight. So this is where have the Fleshlight, and it's awkward, but every once in a while you're just like, hey. I should point out, so I'm living in the Pontalba building, which is one of the most elegant buildings in New Orleans. It's right on Jackson Square. And my front door opens up onto St. Peter Street. And it's exactly 200 yards from the apartment where Tennessee Williams wrote A Streetcar Named Desire. And there's a plaque on the door. So sometimes I'm afraid all I could think was, wow, if there was some sort of video time machine, I really think it would be amazing for people to see 200 yards from where I am right now, Tennessee Williams is writing, you know, Stella, and let's get dressed up and go down to Galatoire's and stuff like that. And then you pan over just a little bit, and there's Lieutenant Dangle fucking a fleshlight. Let's go down to Galatoire's and cover things. I've always relied on the kindness of strangers.
Ficky, fleshlight, ficky. Ticket, flashlight, ticket.
But so most of my life, as a person with an OCD who has a shitload of Purell backstage, most of my, after my dates, which is a nice thing to call it when you fuck a fleshlight. Date might be an overstatement. But so after you have sex with a fleshlight, which not sex, this is not sex, it's just a thing. Yeah. It's an amazing hand somebody made for you. But so I got very into the washing and the care of it because of my problems with mess and things like that. So I got super into the sort of like maintenance. It just became just about like, even sometimes if it didn't need it, I was like, you know what, I'm going to wash the fleshlight and just... And it's fun because you pull it out of the tube, it has like this exoskeleton, and then you pull the fleshlight out and it just sort of collapses. And so I did a lot of, like, you wash it in soap and hot water, and there was a night, I had forgotten I had washed the fleshlight, and, the only thing in my bedroom in the Pontalbo, just off Jackson Square in New Orleans was there was an antique, oscillating fan that would just kind of rotate. Thank you for the sound effect. So this oscillating fan would rotate back and forth. And there was a night that I woke up in the middle of the night after, you know, a fair amount of drinks. And I walked over and I could see on the wardrobe that the antique oscillating fan was drying my fake vagina in the moonlight. And there was like, you could just see, just reflected, there was like the Spanish moss out the window and the moonlight and the oscillating fan and a fake vagina on the wardrobe. And I legitimately thought out loud to myself, oh my God, I wish Tom Waits was here to see this. That is my time. I love you. Don't forget me.
Purchasing products at Mr. Binky's is easy, fun, and affordable. But the real fun starts when you get them home. Drop by Mr. Binky's today.
They are on Charter Street, and they're called Mr. Binky's, and they're open 24 hours.
I got jack-off pills for you, yeah!
I live in New York now because I work on The Daily Show, but before that, I was living in California, which is where I was born and raised. So when I moved to New York, it's kind of the first instance of me becoming a full-grown adult. So I've been trying to just in general go out more and like be social and like go to bars and clubs because, you know, YOLO and I'm young or whatever. I always feel obligated and I feel like that's what I'm supposed to be doing. But my sister was in town for her birthday and I was like, oh, okay, like my sister's in town. I need to show her New York City. I need to act like I go out all the time, which I fucking don't because I hate going out. And my best friend also had moved to New York for a few months. So she was there and my sister were there and they're both really good at going out. So they were like, all right, let's go to a couple bars. We'll paint the town red. We'll hang out. So my sister goes home early and I stop having fun maybe at like 2 a.m. My best friend and I were at a bar in Williamsburg on the south side called The Woods and she got roofied. I did not know that she got roofied. I just thought she was really hammered, so I thought it was really funny. I just thought she was done, like, slurring her words. She had rode a bike to the bar we were at, and when we got outside, she was like, okay, I'll ride my bike home. And she, like, started to try and get on the bike and was just, like, falling over, eating shit. And it was hilarious. And the bouncer was like this big black guy that was like, yo, you better make sure she gets home. I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll get her home. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to walk your bike and I'm going to walk you back up to North 9th. I'm going to just get you in bed and then I'm going to walk back to my place and go to sleep. So we're walking and she's like turning left and turning right, just she's out of her mind, she's tripping and falling. I'm having to like hold her up and walk her bike, but again, because I think she's drunk, I think it's hilarious. And finally we get to her finally we get to her loft, and she at the time lived in this kind of hip artsy loft that has one of those elevators that's a service elevator, and she's trying to like, the door pops open, so she tries to like pull it down and she's just pulling it and it's pathetic. So I'm like, hold on, you're drunk. Mama's got to teach you a lesson. I know how to do this. So I reach and grab the outside of the elevator door and I put all my body weight on it and I pull it as hard as I can. And a second elevator door, the inside door, comes and just slams on my arm. I should have known, like, in retrospect, that every elevator has two doors. That's, like, the way that elevators work. And I just remember I had a Nixon watch that I used to wear all the time. It was, like, a metal watch that I really loved. And I remember it snapping and falling down the elevator shaft and just being like, shit, my watch. And then I, like, looked at my arm and saw that where my watch was, there was a gash. And blood was squirting out. And I was like, okay, that doesn't look good. And I look at my best friend who's kind of like fumbling around. My first instinct was I need to find an adult. And I was like, okay, well, we need to get to my apartment, to my doorman. And she still didn't know what was going on. And I was still too afraid to tell her because I think for some reason I still wanted to take care of her. And I had no idea that my arm had snapped. So we walk 3 blocks from her apartment to my apartment, which was stupid. And I go to my doorman. He's like, oh my God, what happened? And I was like, an elevator door closed on my arm. And I think my friend's really hammered. So he's like, you need to go to a doctor. We need to call the ambulance. And I was like, wait, hold on. Don't call the ambulance yet. And he was like, why? I was like, I need to call my dad and make sure we have health insurance. So I called my dad, who was sleeping in California, and I was like, hey, Dad, so I hurt my arm real bad. I think I need a couple of stitches. No big deal. Do you think I can call the ambulance? And he was like, girl, hang up this damn phone and call the ambulance. You know you have health insurance. Don't you ever call me for something like that again. Call the ambulance and then call me back. What is the matter with you? I hung up the phone. And I was like, hey, so I guess we can call the ambulance. Let's get that going. And I just thought I needed a couple stitches anyway at this point. So he takes my best friend upstairs, puts her in my apartment, and calls the ambulance, and they're there in like 10 minutes. This black lady comes, and she's got this weird nonchalant attitude. And I'm like, okay, this makes me feel a little better because that means this isn't an emergency. When she puts me into the ambulance, she's like, all right, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know. My hand's bleeding. She's like, all right, what hospital do you want to go to? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, I'm from LA. I don't know any of the hospitals. She taps the driver and she's like, take her to Bellevue. I was like, okay. I had no idea what Bellevue Hospital was. And as we're going to the hospital, she's like looking at me, but she's starting to fall asleep. Her eyes are like sort of half closed, but she's looking at me. She's like, yo, you all right? I was like, sort of, but like, can you ask me questions and make me feel calm? And she ended up falling asleep on the way to the hospital. Finally, I get out. I'm bleeding everywhere. My arm's starting to swell. The adrenaline that was coursing through my veins is starting to wane a bit. So I'm starting to feel everything. And this lady that drove me there is like casually talking to this guy trying to book me into the computer system, but they're talking about like black people and how their predisposition to play basketball really well. And they started to talk about the Knicks, which is insane because I'm bleeding everywhere with what was a broken arm. After like 10 minutes when they were flirting with each other, and I was like, hey guys, this hurts and I'm bleeding and I'm here by myself. Can you guys take care of me in a professional way? And the lady was like, I could do two things at once. I don't need to be just talking about you in order to do my job. And I was like, oh my God. So I wait for 2 hours in the emergency waiting room. Nobody else is there because it's 5 a.m. They take me in for x-rays. Everybody's got a shitty, fucked up attitude because nobody wants to be working at 5 a.m. Finally, I'm sleeping like in a chair. A doctor comes out and is like, hey, so you definitely have an open compound fracture. Your bone's going through your skin. We need to have surgery right now in the next 10 minutes. They're prepping you. And also, because it's infected, you have to stay for 2 days. And I was like, what? Wait a minute. Huh? Right after they told me that, they're starting to take off my clothes, put an IV in my arm. They're prepping me for surgery. And then at this point, that's when I start crying because I get really scared. I've never had surgery before. I hate this hospital. Everyone's super mean and rude. They're starting to give me IVs and poke and prod me. And so I start crying and I'm like, okay, well, my older sister's in town. I need to call my sister. I'm not going into surgery without my sister, and snotting all over myself. I was really focused on taking care of my friend. I have this very weird, and always have had this very weird, like, warrior mentality where I'm like, I have to save the people. That's like something that I'm working on with my therapist, because I feel like that particular experience triggered like me to think about myself and be like, oh my God, I have like this weird need to be responsible for some reason that doesn't really benefit me. So like, Jessica, clean it up.
This is Risk. This is Wildlife behind me now. And that was Jessica Williams of The Daily Show we just heard. Hey, if you're interested in taking a stab at this storytelling stuff, we teach it at thestorystudio.org. Whether your aim is to get up at shows like Risk or The Moth, or to be able to communicate better in job interviews or business presentations, or to feel more comfortable in your own skin in social situations like dating or a night out for drinks, at thestorystudio.org we have a workshop for you. One-day workshops, two-day workshops, business workshops, six-week workshops, workshops for dating, workshops for self-exploration and self-empowerment. There's our one-on-one training over Skype. There's the customized workshops that we do for the staffs of businesses. There's our online video lecture series. And for the first time ever, we will be doing a two-day basic storytelling workshop in Los Angeles, as taught by Beowulf Jones, who's the producer of The Risk Show in Los Angeles. That will be taking place on September 28th. If you're in New York and you're interested in the Storytelling for Dating workshop that I've mentioned on the show before, just write to me directly at kevin@risk-show.com. And if you're in New York and you feel like an absolute beginner to this kind of stuff, maybe you haven't had much creative writing experience or stage time, you just want to dip your toe in a very, very safe space, check out this brand new sort of level zero class we're offering called Storytelling for Personal Growth, Find Your Voice and Get What You Want. That'll be taught by myself and Don Fraser. It starts on September 16th, and everything you want to know is at thestorystudio.org. Our final story in this episode comes to us from the one and only, the madman, Mr. Andy Dick. He told this story when Risk was at LA Podfest a little while back, and we call this one The Fly.
I'm going to tell the story, it's not funny, of how I hit my glass ceiling unexpectedly with women, okay? So I've always been very open about my sexuality ever since I was like 6, and I had a fetish for laying on my cousin's bare back because I just liked hit. The feel of his skin against my skin. So right away I'm like, it wasn't a gender issue. It was more just like, I like the feel of skin on skin. And every human has skin, right? So it's not a gender, unless there's something going on, and then that's a whole other thing. Is pus a lubricant? So, what are you going to comment? He just whispered, that's gross. So, I have dated a lot of girls and a lot of guys. And let me cut right to the point. I'm shooting news radio at the time. And we're in a dark sound stage. I think it was stage 23. And the door opens in the corner. And like I said, it's dark. And in walks this angel, really. I swear there was a shaft of light coming from, I don't know where, I'm going to guess heaven. And shining, just, it was almost like you, ma'am. You're just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, and then you had to put on the goofy face. She went, not me. Because she's so pretty. And there was a shaft of light that just lit her up. It's probably because she was so porcelain, right, and pale, and her hair was blonde like you, that every little bit of light that was in this sound stage was hitting her and reflecting back off of her. And I stopped everything, and I'm like, who is that? And she was walking with Tony Carey, I remember his name. And he was her boss. She was an intern at Brillstein Gray. Well, Tony Carey did me a solid by, I guess we locked eyes and we saw each other. I mean, I'm nothing. There's no shaft of light on me. I have the real lights. And so we made a little bit of a contact, but then she told me later that Tony Carey said to her, look, you can date anybody you want in this town, just not Andy Dick. So right away, I'm in the door. Because girls like their bad guys. So she's intrigued immediately. That same day, I got up there. I get very nervous around very beautiful women, as normal men do. I get nervous, and I went up to her and I said, "Hey, I would love to go take you out or something, maybe dinner, whatever. I would love it." She said, "Sure," and I just turned around and walked away. I couldn't believe she said sure, and I didn't go further. I didn't say, "Okay, well, maybe on Wednesday or next week, or we'll go see a movie, or we'll take you dinner." Nothing. I was just so flabbergasted that she said yes that I just turned and walked away. But then I was like, "Yes, I'm gonna go on a date with her." Never did follow up all day. Now we're in the parking lot. She's driving away, and I see her from a distance, and we lock eyes again, and I felt I had to wave, just like, "Oh, yeah, hi, remember me, the fucking idiot that asked you out, and I never followed up." And she rolled her window down. She's like, "Hey, what about that date?" And I'm like, "Oh, my God, this is really happening." So just cut to us later that night. We're both a little tipsy, but I'm fucking her. She wasn't the best in bed. She didn't need to be. She was so fucking beautiful. She could lay there. I didn't care. Kind of like a dead fish, but I didn't care. I didn't care. So now let's cut to, 5 years later? We've had now a monogamous relationship for 5 years. I barely cheated on her. And when I did, by the way, it's just because I needed my lobster. You know what I'm saying? Steak, 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 steak. She's the steak, steak, steak. Or maybe she's the lobster. Lobster, 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 lobster. Every night, every night, every night. I needed a little steak every now and then. I'm talking about a man. Every once in a while, I needed to be with a guy. But if I forgive my language, but I fucked the fucking shit out of her every fucking day for 5 years. My record to this day of fucking in one day is with her 9 times in one day. Till it's like I'm fucking sandpaper, and when I come, it's like dust. And it hurts a little. Do you know what I mean? But I couldn't get enough of her. I had to always be with her. I had to be touching her, holding her. It just became horribly codependent. That's what happens with me. It got to a place where, like I said, the only way I can describe it is horribly codependent, mostly on my part. But I got her to become codependent too, where she needed me as much as I needed her. And you know what I mean? Nobody needs anything. So we were in this horrible now relationship where it was based in sex for me, because sex for me is important and still is important. I love sex. Does everybody like sex? It's fun, right? So we're fucking a lot, fucking a lot, fucking, 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 fucking. Oh, and then one time she did catch me with the guy. And when I'm with the guy, it's very mild. Remember the skin on skin thing? So mostly it's just us like kind of jerking each other off. And she unexpectedly came in the room and she saw us, and his dick is in my hand and I'm jerking my, and I'm like, "Huh?" And she just collapses on the floor. So sad, but she just went, "Oh," in a puddle of despair, and just was moaning, "No." And I'm like, "No, no, 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 no." And it was that whole "It wasn't me" song. "It wasn't me, but your dick was in his hand. It wasn't me. I just saw you coming. It wasn't me." I honestly made up a whole story. "No, he was getting out of the shower. I was getting in the shower. I swear to God, it wasn't fucking me." And somehow I either convinced her or she just chose to believe that it truly wasn't me. She put up with that, and she was fine with that. She knew that I was bi, and she knew I liked guys. And I think she let me be with a guy once or twice, but this one, she just caught me. Now we're just in a horrible place. We're not getting along. We're fighting. We're still fucking. Hate fucks. or makeup sex. That's all our sex was. I'm either going to fuck her because I'm just so fucking mad at her, or she's mad at me, or makeup sex. Like, but you know, I love you so much, so let's have sex and make up. It's getting old, and I'm starting to think maybe, I think I met somebody else. I did. I met somebody else. And then I ran into a very famous actor that I know that I don't want to say his name because I don't want this to get out, but he is a very famous actor that also teaches classes. And I ran into him while I was at dinner with, her name is Lee. Whoops. She here. And yeah. I said, you should take his class. In my mind, thinking, you know, maybe even be with him in my mind. So now she's taking his class and he's inviting her out to dinner. And we're still fighting. And I'm talking about like screaming fights, screaming at each other, screaming, where I say, maybe you should just go and be with that guy. His name, you know what? He was in a movie called The Fly. You still don't know who it is. I could be talking about Vincent Price. So, this very tall actor who also teaches classes, I'm going to cut ahead, and now they're fucking. Now they're fucking. After I pushed her off, I'm just going to go be with him. He wants me. He wants me. Like you don't. You know, the underlying thing. He wants me. Please, I will send him a fucking fruit basket if he takes you. It was like always trying to be clever with your shit like that. And so they're fucking, of course, you know how we are. Right when the fucking fly is fucking her, I go into there's a pit of despair in my stomach. I'm like, no, 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 no. What was I fucking thinking? This is not happening. Now I need to get her back. But there was this weird week or two where she was going to show me, and she did, where she didn't come back, and I just laid on my bed in what I call the shroud of dick, because I made a puddle. I had three therapists at the time. I'm not kidding, because no single one of them would see me for enough time to be able to. All I wanted to do was talk about it, so I'd go from one to the other to the other, and AA on top of it, because I wasn't drinking. And one of the female therapists said this phrase to me. She said, detoxing from an unhealthy relationship is not similar to detoxing from heroin. It's exactly the same. And this explained why I would be in my laying on my shroud of dick in a puddle, and I would have to just move over. And I could see a print of my fucking body, and then move over until I made another one, and then move over until, and I had one of those cow kings, so I would have just seven of me lined up in sweat until she would show up again, because I became the mistress. Now so-and-so and her are going out, but she was still addicted to my big fat dick. Sorry. Had to get that in there too, didn't I? And so I would lay in my shroud, and she would come over, quickly say, he's expecting me, we're just having dinner around the corner, strip down, fuck me, and then go, I'm so sorry, but I really have to go. Zip this, zip, zip it. And then she'd run out the door, and I'm like, Jesus, I feel like I've been raped. And this is how our relationship went for another couple weeks, where I was the mistress. Then I finally got her back. Because he wasn't into normal sex. He did this weird tantric sex thing, she said, where he would hold his orgasm in, he would hold in his semen, he'd be like about to come and stop. And basically, during the time when they were together, I did some horrible, horrible things to him. I'm like a little firecracker, and this guy like towers over me, but he would do these like jazz piano clubs. Vincent Price used to play piano. And I showed up and accosted him in front of the audience. And he went, "You fucking asshole!" Honestly, to God, till he, first I sat in the audience and watched him, and we caught eyes, and he like gave me a little wave, and I'm like, I didn't even move. Yeah, I'm here, you motherfucker. And then he starts shuffling his papers to leave, and I'm just yelling at him. I'm like, come on, let's go right now outside, but at the top of my lungs. I mean, how did they have sex? Did he spit on her like a fly does? Dissolves it up. You know, like, it's just disgusting. I had all these horrible, help me. At the time, I was in hell. Like, I found out where he lived. I had my assistant at the time stalk. I was too busy, so I couldn't stalk them. I couldn't personally stalk them, so I had my assistant just give me the play-by-play over the phone. Now what the fuck are they doing? He's like, they're standing by the car kissing. What? Hide. I am. I'm, you know. So it was such a weird way to stalk. And so I did do some, let's just say that I did some things to his pool. He lives in the hills, and I mapped it out where I could go up on a street above the whole house and I could see. And I got this whole concoction going where, because I got very, very mad because basically he did something really bad to her and I still loved her. He did something bad, but they were yet still together, and I was baffled. I didn't understand. So I was trying to wake everybody up I made this thing where I got cartons of milk and I just held them till out in the sun till they rotted, and eggs too. And I happened to have, don't ask me how because I don't remember, but it was a stick of dynamite. It's for seals. They light it and they throw it in the ocean to scare seals off of piers, but it's fucking underwater dynamite. Like, it's not a cherry bomb. Like, it would blow your fucking hand off if you held it. And I just tossed all these things in the pool, and bleach, just anything I could to just ruin his pool. And then just to set, you know, and it was a rainy day when I did this, and it was at night. I mean, it was raining. I'm in the rain with all my concoction of fucking pure shit with dynamite. I felt like I was in a movie. I felt like Cape Fear. But why am I doing this? What is going on? And then just to say, hey, check your pool out, I light the thing and throw it, and it lands perfectly in the pool and just explodes so loudly. And I know, you know, now he's gonna know. But I'm sure at the time he knew what the fuck was up. So I feel safe that I can talk about my end. Because he could press charges, I guess. It's been years, though, right? So, it's like, you want to be vulnerable on up here, but I don't know how far to go. Long story short, and here's where I wrap it up. That was my glass ceiling with women. She still is, to me, the most beautiful girl I've ever been with. And now I pretty much only date guys, but I don't let myself fall in love with somebody who could reciprocate it. So I fall in love with straight guys because I don't want it to get. It's psychological. It's subconscious. I can't let it get as close as it did with me and her, because my close is an unhealthy, very unhealthy close. And in the end, I got her back. And when I got her back, it must have been a good, this is after the fly. I got her back. And now, it must have only been 72 hours where I'm like, why am I back with her? It was like a really bad relationship. It was so horrible. I'm throwing seal dynamite in someone's pool. And I tried to beat this guy, I'd be in jail right now. This is not good. And then within a week, the whole thing dissolved, and I've never seen her again. It's been years. Drunk dialed her a few times. But I'm trying very hard to, you know, move to my next level of just falling in love with straight guys. It's working out for me. Thank you guys so much for listening to me.
That's it for this week, folks. This is Boys, Boys, Boys behind me now. It's my kind of band name. Now listen, like I said, if you're new to Risk, you gotta check out more episodes. The best of episodes are always a great place to start, but there's many, many wonderful episodes. You can always find everything we have to offer at risk-show.com. You can find out when our next live shows are happening. For example, on September 25th, we're in Chicago. On September 26th, we're in both New York and Los Angeles. You can find all that out at risk-show.com/tour. And if you like what you hear as you get to know the podcast, keep something in mind. Risk is a proud member of the Maximum Fun network of podcasts. Maximum Fun is an amazing collective of high-quality entertainment, just the best stuff, the best people, and we are listener-supported programming. We are just barely scraping by. Takes a lot of people, a lot of effort, a lot of love to put a show like this together and get it out every week. And our funds are dangerously low. So we rely on the help of the people who love what we do. If you would like to help us out, all you have to do is go to MaximumFun.org/donate and become a member or make a one-time donation, but be sure and earmark your contribution for Risk. We are hugely, hugely grateful for the support of our listeners. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Risk Show. You can follow me on Twitter at TheKevinAllison. Our school is at TheStoryStudio.org. And with all that said, there's just one thing left to say on this 150th time being with you. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Anyway, I'm rambling, okay, but...
Hold on one second. I'm going to open the door so that the cat can come in.
Yeah.
Places. Just one second.
Yeah, of course.
Fine. I'm going to open that door.
He's out getting his cat. So unprofessional. That's what I'm going to leave on this recording. Just unbelievable.